Good morning. It's Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. The protests and riot of last week's have focused our attention on the fractured relationship between police and some neighborhoods. The Public Defender's Office in Baltimore says that fracture extends to young people in those neighborhoods. They say a much higher percentage of young people are sent through the juvenile justice system after being arrested in the city than in the rest of the state. At least 49 juveniles were arrested during the riot and shortly after. And a significant percentage of them will enter the juvenile justice system, despite indicators that they should not, says the Public Defender's Office. We reached out to the Department of Juvenile Services to talk about it. They declined our interview request, but sent us a written statement, which we'll post on our website. We also got no response from the Assistant State's Attorney in charge of juvenile cases, and Baltimore Police did not respond to our request this morning. Christine Burke, a supervising attorney in the Public Defender's Office who handles juvenile cases, joins us by phone to talk about the situation. Welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Tell me about these 49 youth who were arrested. What were they arrested for? How old were they?
They ranged from age from 12 to about 17. The overwhelming charges were disturbing the peace, curfew violations, things that resulted from the unrest last week. There were several cases as well of what we would call looting, but they were charged as second-degree burglaries.
Okay. And what... Actually, lay out for us the process that you would have expected juveniles in Baltimore City to go through, and how that differed from what you saw happening.
Sure. So generally what happens is a youth is brought to the juvenile justice system either through a civilian complaint or the police from arrest. They're brought to Gay Street and processed through they're transferred custody to the Department of Juvenile Services. Once that happens, there's two objective tools that the Department of Juvenile Services uses to determine what the risk assessment is for that child, whether or not that child should be detained or whether that child's case as well should be formalized and sent to through the court system.
Let me interrupt just to clarify. When you say there's a tool that's mm-hmm. used, this is a list of questions?
It is. It factors in there's two different tools. The first tool that decides whether or not to detain the child factors in their risk to public safety, their likelihood to appear for court, those kind of factors, and also the severity of the offense that's being charged. The other tool is a tool that takes into consideration the child's educational background, community-based factors, family background, things of that nature.
Okay, I'm going to further interrupt your description, which
sure.
I really want you to continue walking us through. But I want to play a clip from a interview we did about two years ago in June of 2013 about alternatives to putting juveniles arrested, putting them in detention. We talked to Lisa Gary, who coordinates juvenile justice reform at the State Department of Juvenile Services, and she told us then...
We work closely with the juvenile court, with the Office of the Public Defenders, with the state's attorneys, as well as a broad range of community partners. And in the process, we determine, you know, how kids are entering security detention, what are the reasons why they're being admitted, and is there overuse of security detention resources for that population based on an assessed risk of those youth.
So is that description by Lisa Gary, is that the process that you're describing?
Yes. So then the determination is made whether or not to send them to court and to keep them detained. And what we saw last week was that tool was ignored. Essentially, of the 49 kids that were charged, at least 21 were not charged. The state's attorney, they forwarded those complaints to the state's attorney, and the state's attorney, for whatever reason, decided not to formalize those complaints. There were overwhelmingly recommendations for release on those other children, but the recommendation based on the tool was ignored. And instead, those cases were petitioned and sent to court.
And again, I want to make sure that I understand. When you say the overwhelming in the other cases, if 21 were not charged, are we talking about then 29 cases left in the system?
And 28 kids. Mm-hmm.
28. That's right. That's the math. I can do arithmetic. And so you're talking about 28 young people, and when you say the overwhelming recommendation was that they not be charged, that recommendation is coming from whom?
From the Department of Juvenile Services, from their tool. Yes, and either the recommendation was straight release to a parent or release to a parent with the use of some sort of pre-court supervision.
On WYPR, this is Marilyn Morning. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Christine Burke, a supervising attorney in the Public Defender's Office in Baltimore who handles juvenile cases. We're talking about juvenile arrests during and shortly after the riots last week. The Department of Juvenile Services told us in their written statement that they were fully staffed at the time of the riots and prepared to deal with juvenile arrests. They said it was unfortunate that because of the state of emergency, juvenile courts were closed on April 28th. DJS wrote, quote, youth could not be processed within the usual 24-hour period, end quote. But then I want to go on in their statement. They also point to another way that the state of emergency affected decisions about holding young people. Quote, the riot on April 27th was an exceptional time where the order within the city was lost. Due to these events, DJS's role in ensuring the public safety that night outweighed the normal risk factors, and the tool was overridden in accordance with policy. For the safety of the parents and the youth, the department made the decision to hold the young people until a judge could make the ultimate decision to detain or release them, end quote. Christine Burke, what is your reaction to that?
So there were 21 kids that were forwarded to the state's attorney, and they were among those arrested. The state's attorney made a decision of those 21 that there was not enough either sufficient probable cause or reason to prosecute those kids. Those kids were returned, what we call a return to intake, back to the Department of Juvenile Services and released to their parents. So what made those, you know, those kids were forwarded by DJS. The instrument was ignored, but they were released to their parents. It's the remaining kids that were that the state found probable cause to charge them that were then held. So if those 21 could go home, why not the other ones with the recommendation for release?
So basically, you don't think the state of emergency should have dictated what happened?
Right. Well, it didn't for the youth that were denied petition by the state's attorney.
Tell me what it was like for those kids then, because were all 28 held more than 24 hours?
Yes. I believe there were several that did go to a shelter, which is a group home setting, but the vast majority of them were held in secure detention downstairs, which is a concrete cell. They are then handcuffed and shackled and brought to court. They were brought to court on Wednesday afternoon. So if they were arrested on Monday, they did spend Monday night and Tuesday night until Wednesday afternoon in secure detention.
And do you know whether they're still in detention?
There are a couple.
One of the points that the Department of Juvenile Services makes in its written statement is that a youth's record is confidential, sealed by the court, and therefore none of this should have any impact on these young people getting admitted to college at some point or being able to get a job at some point.
Well, that is what is supposed to happen. However, we have seen where it does impact the youth as far as college admittance on college applications, employment opportunities, and also it definitely impacts their ability to enroll in the military. The military wants to know, even if they do get the record sealed, the military wants it unsealed so that they can see what the charges were, and then they make a decision based on that.
This interview that we did 2 years ago about alternatives to detention, about a program called JDI, Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative. How is that working in the city, that effort?
Well, in general, there has been some success in giving kids alternatives to detention with pre-court supervision in some ways. However, what we've seen in Baltimore City is an increase in the amount of cases that are being forwarded to the Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office. Compared to the statewide numbers, Baltimore City DJS formalizes, meaning takes cases that come through the downstairs intake route, and formalizes, meaning sending them to the State's Attorney's Office for court prosecution, 83.9% of cases. When you take Baltimore out of the statewide equation, the statewide average for formalization of petitions is only 41.2%. So clearly it's showing that there's a disparate treatment in Baltimore City of how the cases are being sent to court. So we're over-criminalizing and prosecuting children more in Baltimore City.
So you're saying even aside from this particular instance with the riots and the state of emergency,
yes, I'm
Baltimore is, if two kids, one in Howard County and one in Baltimore, mm-hmm. commit the same act, mm-hmm. the one in Baltimore is like twice as likely to end up
correct.
In the juvenile
in the court
justice system.
That's
and
correct.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's a failure of the Department of Juvenile Services in reaching out sometimes to the family and making additional efforts at the intake level. Our families in Baltimore City have a variety of obstacles. I think that during the intake process, there's supposed to be an interview, a meaningful interview with the parent and the child, and obtaining educational information and things of that nature about the child before the decision is being made to send it to court. I think what's happening is the department, sometimes letters go out, people move, contact information changes kind of fast, and they're unable to make contact with the family, or not enough efforts are made to contact them to have that initial meeting so that the case can be resolved informally. An informal resolution is generally such things as community service, counseling, substance abuse referrals, things that a community conferencing, other ways of resolving the case that are more beneficial to the community as well as the youth before sending it to the court system.
Christine, I appreciate you explaining the situation to us. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Christine Burke is supervising attorney in the Public Defender's Office in Baltimore. She handles juvenile cases. We have more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning, including the statement from the State Department of Juvenile Services and our 2013 interview about Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiative. I'm Sheila Cast. Ahead on Maryland Morning, that empty stadium means what? Stay with us on 88.1.